Shavua Tov Mevorach. I feel privileged that I was asked to speak here tonight amongst Talmidei Chachamim and Great Rabbanim. There's probably nothing that I could say that you didn't hear from your great rabbi or from all the programs that are going on in this great Bet Knesset. So if I'm a little redundant, you'll forgive me. But nonetheless, I'll fulfill the mitzvah of Devrei Torah LaShulchan. Much has been said about what has been written in Parashat Tetzaveh, and even more has been said what's not written in Parashat Tetzaveh, and that, of course, is the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. His name is conspicuously missing. Where is the parasha should have begun with Vaydaber Adonai Moshe Lemor. Instead, it begins with Ve'ata. Ve'ata means and you. You don't call somebody you only for one of two reasons. Either because you don't know their name, or because you know their name, but you don't want to call them by their name. Because either you're angry, or you're upset, or for another reason. HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly knew Moshe's name. So by calling him Ve'ata, that's on purpose. The Ba'al HaTurim points out right in the beginning of the parasha that from the time Moshe Rabbeinu was born, every parasha has his name a few times. More than that, Tetzaveh is the first. And everybody explains because of something that happened the next week's parasha. After the Jewish people served the Egel. So God says, I'm going to destroy Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu says, if you erase them, erase me as well. Meheni na mesifrecha. Moshe Rabbeinu made a stipulation. He said, if you erase them, you erase me. So Borei Olam said, fine, I'm not erasing them and I'm still going to erase you. From here, the Gemara learns the power of the words of the tzaddikim. That even a stipulative word of a tzaddik has so much power that it comes true nonetheless. So Borei Olam says, granted, I gave Klal Yisrael an existence, but the words came out of your mouth, meheni na, those words have to land somewhere. So what you see or what you don't see in Parashat Tetzaveh is a result of meheni na. To be honest, one of the Balabatim in the synagogue this week threw me with a question, which, you know, sometimes you say it's a question of a Balabayit, but the rabbi has to know how to answer questions of Balabatim as well. And sometimes those are the hardest questions. And he asked it so innocently, thinking I have the answer in my pocket. He said, just could I, you explain it, Rabbi? Moshe Rabbeinu makes the sin in next week's parasha, but he gets punished for it in the parasha before he made the sin. How does that work? Which means, if somebody goes to Beit Din, and the Beit Din gives the guy Malkut, they say, what are you giving Malkut for? Eliyahu Navi said, tomorrow you're going to wear Sha'atnez. So the Beit Din's closed tomorrow, it's a legal holiday, so we're going to give you the Malkut today. We have a credit. So right away, go try to explain to a Baal HaBayit, in Mukdam u'Me'ohar b'Torah, doesn't go so easy. That chapter 27 comes before chapter 26. Mathematically, it doesn't work out, and you have to go explain, why should it be like that, putting myself in a bigger question. This question is big enough not to answer a question with a bigger debacle. So this is the answer that came to my mind, which I think I might have stumbled onto a truth unintentionally. What I thought was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kel Rahum V'Hanun, God is Erech Apayim, God is merciful. And although somebody has to mete out a punishment or a certain bill he has to pay, but Borei Olam, he defers it. So if the sin was committed in Parashat Ki Tisa, the first parasha when Moshe Rabbeinu can pay his price is in Vayakel. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, why punish him right away? Push it to Pikudeh. When it came to Pikudeh, Borei Olam said, go to Vayikra already. And then Tzav, and then Vayikra was finished. I'll do it in Bamidbar. And Bamidbar was finished. You know what, we're in Devarim already, let's finish Devarim. Anyway, Bereshit, Moshe is not Shayach to Bereshit anyway. So we went back to Shemot, and then we got to Mishpatim, and then we got to Tiruman, and we finally got to Tetzaveh. God said, this is the last parasha. It's the final parasha that I could punish him. So technically, according to this, Tetzaveh is not before Kitisa. It's actually the latest parasha after Kitisa. And therefore, it was a deferment. It was accepted. It's a novel answer, but I think at least it answers that question, the before and after, without getting involved in Mugdam al-Me'ohar. But the premise of all what we're talking about is that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is missing from the parasha as a sort of punishment, or as a sort of consequence of something that he said. Today in the Beit Knesset, most of the Devre Torah that we said was from the great Rabbi Rabbeinu Chaim Yosef David Azulay, Rabbi Hida, because today was the Yortzeit of the Hida. So we thought to make him the guest of honor in the synagogue, and we dedicated all the Devre Torah to the Hida. And there's enough Devre Torah to the Hida that you could talk from now until the Mashiach, and you still won't get through all the Sefarim. The Hida lived about 210 years ago. That's when he passed away. There was nobody like him. I know you have customs. Some of the Ashkenazim tell stories on Motzei Shabbat about the Baal Shem Tov. We tell stories about the Hida. One story over the Menave Malka. The Hida once was in Europe. He lived in Livorno. And he would go back from Livorno to Yerushalayim. He collected for the Yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael. On one of his trips, he stayed by the house of the Pnei Yoshua. When he was by the Pnei Yoshua, the Pnei Yoshua presented him his new sefer on Seder Moed. I don't have to tell you the essays of the Pnei Yoshua and the Tosfot, how each one is a serious limud. It takes time to understand the question, the yeshuvim. Anyway, he gave it to Rav Hida. Rav Hida accepted it gracefully. And then the next day, Hida left. He forgot the book. So the Pnei Yoshua ran to give him the book. He wrote him a whole hakdama. He left. So what is he going to do? The Pnei Yoshua opens the book, and he notices that he made hagahot on every single page. That means the Hida learned the whole Pnei Yoshua on Seder Moed in one night, and he made hagahot on the book. He left the book because he doesn't need it anymore. He read the book already. He doesn't need to carry extra books. He read the book. He made his hagahot. Next place. That's the gadlut of Rav Hida. He would sit with the Havruta every morning in Livorno and study. One time, the servant came in to bring two coffees for him and his Havruta, but the servant had four coffees. The Hida says, we're two people. Why do you bring four coffees? He says, for these two. He says, these are angels. They don't drink. He had malachim, he had tremendous stories that he writes in all the sefarim about his, he was milumad bin Isim, put it that way. Anyway, what I'm going to tell you now is based on what Rav Hida says. There's a famous midrash. The midrash says, Haviv Moshe Minoah. The Midrash says, who's better? Who's a bigger tzaddik? Moshe and Noah. Now we were told when we were in yeshiva, we never compared tzaddikim. We don't measure tzaddikim. We don't have the apparatus to know who's a bigger tzaddik, although there's a big yetzer hara to do that. When I learned in Lakewood, we were always putting the Ashkenaz and the Sephardic rabbis on the scale and trying to measure them. And then they told us, no, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that. You know, who are you to judge who's bigger and who's not bigger? And of course, you can imagine, we always felt as Faradi and Ashkenazi always felt Ashkenazi. So we were getting nowhere anyway in this argument. It wasn't an honest argument. Nobody was objective in the argument. But the Midrash is able to do it. Hazal are able to take Sadiqim and ask who's better. And that's what they did. So not only could they ask, but they come out with a conclusion. Habib Moshe Minoah. If that's who the race is between Moshe and Noah, Moshe wins. Why? So the Midrash goes out to say, because when God told Moshe and Noah to go on the Teva, Noah went on the Teva with his family, but he didn't do anything for the generation. Noah saved himself and his family, but he didn't do anything really for the people. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu, when God said, I'm going to destroy the nation, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you destroy them, then take me with them, destroy me with me. So if you're looking from that angle, Moshe has something up on Noah. Now, Chas v'Shalom, we didn't come here tonight to roast Noah or be critical of Noah. On the contrary, I think it's a big sheva. The fact that even there's a comparison between the two. They're not comparing us to any of them. The fact that the Midrash even says, who's better, Moshe? The fact that he made it to the comparison list. That already shows you that he must have been great. Noah was a Navi. But nonetheless, the Midrashim are always critical on Noah for that point. When he came off the Teva, he brought a Korban. God said, what are you bringing this Korban for? Hopefully he won't bring another Mabul. He said, why don't you bring the Korban before the Mabul? And maybe I wouldn't have brought this one. So God tells Noah, you know, too little, too late. This was the claim always against Noah. The Al-Sheikh learns that for Noah to go on a Teva was a punishment. He learns the Pesukim like this. Boy la teva, ki otecha ra'iti tzadik lefanai bador hazeh. Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh learns the Pasuk like this. Boy la teva, why the teva? God could have saved him anyways. It says there wasn't a flood in Israel. Send them to Israel for a year. Sabbatical. Well, God has many ways. Bore Olam is not limited to one or two ways. There's infinite ways how Hashem can save Noah. But he said, you're going to suffer on the teva. You know why? Because ko'atecha ra'iti, you're a tzaddik. But you know what type of tzaddik you are? You're a tzaddik lefanai. Your tzidkut is, it only manifests itself to me. But you don't do anything for the generation. So he learns the pasuk rhetorically. Ko'atecha ra'iti tzaddik lefanai. Bador hazeh, in this generation you decided to be a tzaddik lefanai. In this generation that there's so much needed for the people, you didn't do anything for the people. Now you decided to be a tzaddik lefanai. Bador hazeh. Anyway, they say with Moshe Rabbeinu, he was worried about the people. I mean, he was willing to be erased from history for the sake of the people. If I wanted to explain the difference myself between Moshe and Noah, I'm reminded to the Gemara that talks about the hesped that they made for Avraham Avinu. There's no recollection in the Torah of the hesped of Avraham. Just says he passed away, but we don't know what they said at the funeral. The Gemara gives a recollection that the Gedolei Olam got up at the hesped of Avraham Avinu and they said, "Woe, oy la'olam she'avad manhigo, ve'oy le'sefina she'avad kabrinito." They said, "Woe to the world that lost its leader, woe to the ship that lost its captain." And the great Rabbi Meir Shapiro of the famed Daf Hayomi, he questions the hesped, he questions the Gemara. What's greater, a leader of a world or a captain of a ship? Clearly a leader of a world. So the eulogy doesn't make sense. Woe that we lost the leader of the world, and then as if they're upping the ante. Woe that we lost the captain of the ship. Captain of the ship is a downgrade. So Meir Shapiro would say, no. A leader of the world, you need leaders. Leaders are administrators, leaders are organizers, leaders put things right. They're involved in problem solving. But the problem solver that the leader is involved in, he has nothing to do with the people. He's presented a problem, and he solves it. The president solves problems, or he doesn't. That's not the point. It's not a political speech tonight. I don't speak politics. But the point is, the leader is supposed to make decisions, but he's doing that in the Oval Office. He's not connected to the people. He goes to sleep in the White House. He's not connected to the people. what happens to the people, what happens to the leader, it's two separate things. He's not involved in the problem. He's trying to solve it from far away. Avraham was a leader. Clearly, Avraham gave the world direction that nobody ever had before. Avraham Avinu taught them monotheism. He gave them a mahalach of Hayin. This is a leader. But then there's a captain of a ship. A captain of a ship that not only is he leading the ship, but all the problems that the passengers have on the ship, he has the same problems. Because if the ship is having turbulent waters, not only do the passengers feel it, but the captain feels it as well. So the captain is not only guiding the passengers, but he is involved with everything that they're going through. That's a much higher level. Avraham Avinu was a captain of a ship. That means he was involved and mitzaed himself with the people. So I would say, Noah was a manhig of the olam. He problem solved, but he problem solved from far, and the people's problem didn't affect him. He just saved himself. Where Moshe is a captain of a ship. Moshe Rabbeinu says, what are you talking about? If they drown, drown me with them. I go down with the ship. If I wanted to compare it, not that you need Mishalim from history, but just to bring it closer to the Olam Hazeh, there were two cases in history in the news that you're probably familiar with where you see the clear difference between them. In recent history, you had a captain of a boat, of one of these big cruise ships, where the cruise was going off of one of the islands in Greece, and they hit a sandbar, and the ship started to take on water, and it started to list to one side, and it was taking on water, it was sekana, so everybody jumped off the boat. And some people weren't able to get off the boat, but they were looking for the captain. They couldn't find the captain. They found that after, he was the first one that got off the boat. They show the videos and pushing the passengers to get off the boat, and they found him in a bar in Greece drinking, l'chaim for some yortzeit of some tzaddik that must have been. Whatever he was doing, they said, what are you, out of your mind? This is you're the captain of the ship. And that's considered a crime. It's a maritime crime to leave the ship. That's one example. If you remember the old history in the 1970s, when there was an Air France jet that was hijacked, and they took it to Entebbe. And when they were in Entebbe, the hijackers said to all the non-Jews, they can go, they're free. And they just checked the Jews' passports, and they made a selection of some sort, and only the Jews remained. The pilot and the crew were exempt. After all, they were goyim. The Air France pilot got up and said, I'm responsible for these people. They're on my manifest. And until I get them to their destination safely, I cannot leave them. This was considered a great act of heroism, because that pilot does not know that they're going to get saved a few days later. He's expecting that these savages are going to shoot up everybody. So they were willing to risk their life. Not comparing anybody to anybody, but those are just two examples where you see the guy who runs away from the boat is looked in the most negative way, and the one that stays with the ship and stays with the passengers is looked like a great... Even in society, we can recognize that. Anyway, that's Habib Moshe Minowah. And here's where Rav Hida comes in. Rav Hida writes that if you look in Parashat Noah, the Haftarah, the Navi there calls the flood of Noah, it calls it Men Noah. Noah's flood. The Zohar HaKadosh on that piece says that Noah's flood is not a compliment. Just like when they name hurricanes, it's not a compliment to have a hurricane named after you, especially if it created a lot of damage. There was one of the ladies in the synagogue, her name is Sandy. And she was the brunt of a lot of jokes. After Hurricane Sandy came and wreaked havoc all over the East Coast, and then she would come in and say, what's your name, Sandy? Oh, like the hurricane. So it's not a compliment to have a hurricane named after you. And the Zohar HaKadosh says they named the flood Men Noah. That's Hurricane Noah. They weren't up to N, but they still named it Hurricane Noah. So that's not flattering that the hurricane is named after him. And the Zohar HaKadosh says Hurricane Noah because it was his fault. His fault. He didn't do anything. He just saved himself. They say it's tzaddik in a fur coat. He didn't save anybody else. It's the claim. Man Noah. Here comes Rav Chida. Rav Chida says, sometimes Borei Olam will give the tzaddik a chance to make what's called the tikkun. Sometimes he can make it himself, sometimes he has to make it through others, which is called Gilgul Neshamot. By no means am I an expert on Gilgul Neshamot. I don't even want to give an impression of that. I still didn't figure out who I am, let alone who I was and all that stuff. I'm sure the great Rabbanim here have a better handle on Gilgul. Nonetheless, the Ida says that Noah had to come back. And oddly enough, he came back into Moshe. Moshe is the Gilgul of Noah. I don't find it coincidental that they're the only two people that ever went into a teva in the Torah. Noah went into the teva when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. His mother puts him in a teva. It's very interesting that there's that coincidence. And Rashi on that point over there, where Moshe's teva, starts comparing this teva to the teva of Noah. Rashi says, hey, in Noah's teva, the tar was on the inside. And on this teva, Moshe was on the outside. He says, oh, but God didn't want him to smell the tzaddik to smell. But Noah has to smell it. Because Noah, you're only concerned about the people on the inside. So you're going to smell it on the inside. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned about the people on the outside. So therefore the tar's on the outside, he doesn't smell it. So there's correlations between the two. As a matter of fact, it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the pasuk says, "Vatere oto kitovu." His mother saw that he's good, so she hid him and then she put him in a teva. He was good, he was tov, so she put him in a teva. I don't know how a mother knows a baby that's just born is tov. So you tell me, oh, he had a circumcision, he was born brit mila. Oh, it says netmane habayit ora, or because it was filled with light. Fine, that's, I cannot argue with that. That's brought down. But maybe there's another interpretation. She saw he was tov, and then she put him in a teva. Well, if you do the calculations, from Noah to Avraham, there was 10 generations, as we know. Mishnah, Pirkei Avot, Asara Dorot. Then you have Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. Yaakov has a son called Levi. Levi has a son called Kehat. Kehat has Amram. Amram is Moshe. So Noah to Moshe is 17 generations. So the pasuk says, "Vatere oto ki tovu." Tov is 17. Oh, he's the 17th generation. Must be he's coming to mitaken Noah. So she put him in a teva in order to make the keshet. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. The point of the chidah is that all of a sudden Moshe Rabbeinu is confronted with a deja vu that happened to him in a previous life. Same scenario. God says, I'm going to destroy all Klal Yisrael. What do you have to say to that, Moshe? And you're going to be saved. Don't worry, you're good. And I'll make a new nation from you. This is Moshe's Noah moment. Moshe has two options. He can make the same mistake that Noah made and say, I'm good. I'm good, fine, that's good. Like the captain on the ship that went to the bar. Save himself. Or at this point, Moshe could make a tikkun, like the pilot, and say, no, 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 I stay with the passengers. And at that point, all of a sudden, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Mehenina! And the bells start to ring in heaven. We have a winner. And Noah is clapping from Shammai, Moshe, you saved my life. I was supposed to say, Mehenina, the first round. I wasn't able to. So Moshe Rabbeinu fixes Noah. Mehenina. And then Rav Chida writes that if you take the letters, Mehenina, they're the exact letters of Minoah Ani. And he says if you take the word Meheni alone, Mem Het Nun Yud, Meheni spells Men Noah. So whether Moshe knew, Mistama, he knew everything. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest prophet. So he knows, Mehenina, Minoah Ani, he knew this was his Noah moment. This was his moment to make the tikkun. Man Noah, he has to fix Hurricane Noah. He wants them to erase that from the Weather Channel. Erase that Hurricane Noah from the list. And he made the tikkun. So therefore, I'll tell you something else. Rav Hida writes that Moshe Rabbeinu carried his own neshama, he carried Noah's neshama, and don't ask, but he also carried the neshama of Shet, the son of Adam. Adam, Shet, Enosh. I don't know what Shet did that he had to come back in Moshe. That we'll have to open the Sefarim HaKedoshim. So he says, it's no coincidence that if you look at the last word of last week's parasha, Teruma, the last word is Nehoshet. And the first word of this week's parasha is Ve'ata. That's the Gidul of Moshe, Nehoshet. Noah, Shet, Ve'ata. It's all connected, all three. So Noah is there. So we see already Noah is very close to Parashat Tetzaveh. He's right there. Nehoshet ve'ata. So my theory is like this, Rabotai B'Shut Kal Kadosh. I'm taking it with a grain of salt. I don't say Kabelu Dafti. But what I say is, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is missing from the parasha, it's a compliment. It's not a punishment. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is a captain of a ship that was willing to go down with the ship, and you see that from the moment that he said, Me'eni na. And so when God deletes his name from the parasha, we're not punishing Moshe. This is not to the discredit. They're saying he's only erased because he asked to be erased because he wanted to sacrifice his life for Am Yisrael. And God says, if this is going to be done, I don't want it to only be lip service. I want to show you that there was a sacrifice that was made. He ultimately made a sacrifice. He had his name erased. Therefore, Habib Moshe Mi Noah. It wasn't just lip service, erase me. He did it. It was erased. Normally, when somebody's erased from something, it's because he's non-deserving. He's getting punished, so we take his name off the list because you lost the zechut. Here, the deletion of Moshe's name is to his credit. That's Lesheva. When we see Moshe's name missing in this parasha, we say, Moshe Rabbeinu. Look how what a tzaddik he was. This is as a result of his selflessness for Klal Yisrael. This is as a result of a tremendous midah. That he feels the pain of someone else as if it's his, and therefore he's willing to take the same fate as Klal Yisrael, even though he wasn't involved in it. He was up in Shemayim getting the Torah. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu could have been angry at Klai. I'm working to get the Torah, and this is what you're doing. Mechani na. Menoah ani. Menoah. The only question then is, why this parasha? Why does this have to happen in this parasha? So either, like I told you, it's the last parasha, but according to what I'm saying, the Gaon Mevilna said, as you all know, this is not a hadush to anybody, that Parashat Tetzaveh will always come in the week of Zayin Adar. It has to work. Not everybody here uses the Hebrew calendar. Most people, unfortunately, are connected to the Gregorian calendar. So, who knows when Zayin Adar is? Zayin Adar is one of those days that it happens, and they say, oh, that was Zayin Adar. Today was Zayin Adar. Yesterday was Zayin Adar. Purim, we know. This week is Purim Katan. We know more or less. But Zayin Adar is not a... It's a day that passes us. So the Hakamim said, don't worry, you'll always remember Zayin Adar, at least in the vicinity. When you go to Shul on Shabbat, they read Parashat Tetzaveh, and the Gaon Mevilna says this. And Moshe Rabbeinu's name is missing. So it says, because this week Moshe Rabbeinu went missing. This week Moshe Rabbeinu died. His yahrzeit will be in the parasha where his name is not mentioned. So I said, very good. At a yahrzeit, you talk good things about, like they were talking about Mr. Levenger here tonight. And the yahrzeit, or at the time that we talk about Tzaddikim, Zecher Tzaddik Lebracha. We mentioned good things about the Tzaddik. So during the yahrzeit, what could be mentioned about Moshe Rabbeinu? So they said, you know what we're going to mention? By not saying his name in Parashat Tetzaveh, that'll remind you of one of the greatest accomplishments of Moshe Rabbeinu. It'll remind you of the Mehenina. It reminds you of this great tikkun of not the great leader, but the great captain. This will remind you of Moshe Rabbeinu. When we think of Parashat Tetzaveh, they say, Moshe Rabbeinu person, anything good to say about him? Yeah, where should I find something good about Moshe Rabbeinu? Look what the Torah doesn't have to say about him in Parashat Tetzaveh. The fact that he's omitted, that already tells me great shevach of Moshe. Not only Zecher Tzaddik Lebracha, but Ezecher Tzaddik is Lebracha. And the lesson obviously is clear to us. The Midrash already has voted Haviv Moshe Minoah. It seems to me, as from the speeches, only the few speeches, and only for the few moments that I've been here tonight in the great Bet Knesset, that this is what's instilled in all of these members. It seems like a very cohesive group, and everybody's concerned about one another, everybody's involved with one another. It's not a group of yechidim, individuals. It's a sibur. And the sibur is... everybody has, Rabbeinu Ari said to his students, the most important thing in the group of the learners, that everybody has to be concerned with each other's welfare. He says, if everybody's going to accept upon himself to be worried about the next guy and to be concerned, then the Habura will have a success. That's what Arizal told the students, but if we sit down as individuals and each guy wants to save himself, the Torah won't go in. Moshe Rabbeinu was not only Moshe Rabbeinu in Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Rabbeinu in Midot, in Hanhaga, in action, in ethics. And therefore, I say tonight that the lesson is very clear. Our Torah is amazing. No book can have lessons from what's not said. In yeshiva, they always tell us you can learn more from what the Rambam didn't say than what he said. But it's true in any of our sefarim. Sometimes the omission already flashes lights that we have to, a signal, there's a signal here, why wasn't it said? And we can make a whole Torah on what wasn't said. But I think the lesson is great. Our lesson must be to be like the manhig, not of the world, but like to be the manhig, the kabarnit of the Sefina. Shavua Tov u'Mevorach.